Evening, everyone. I'm broadcasting live, April 26th. Today's quote, again about anger. This time from the Visuddhimagga. It's under the teaching about metta. So in order to cultivate metta, you have to be skillful in overcoming anger. And yet there's this set of verses that forms tonight's quote. So the first stanza is, if someone hurts you, insofar as they can, they've done whatever they can to hurt you. That makes you hurt once. You hurt because of the things that they've done. And then the question you should ask yourself. So this quote is actually supposed to be directed to yourself. When you get angry about something someone has done to you, you should ask yourself, why do I want to hurt myself again? Why am I sitting here hurting myself because someone has hurt me? Why am I doing it again? Why am I making it twice as bad? Why am I helping my enemies? People who want to bring me suffering, why do I suffer? Do you think that anger is a valid response, a proper response to anything, really? The Buddha said if you're in pain and then you get upset about it, it's like you have a thorn or a splinter in your skin, and you take another thorn and you try to gouge it out. You make it twice as bad. The second stanza is, in tears you left your family. They had been kind and helpful too. So why not leave your enemy, the anger that brings harm to you? So we left behind all that was dear to us to come to meditate, to cultivate spirituality. We give up all the good things, and all the good things are pleasurable things in the world. And yet we bring our enemies with us, right? What now, when we get angry, why are we holding on to bad things? This is an admonishment, a self-admonishment for someone who is angry. Actually, it's generally easier to give up anger than it is to give up greed or craving. And so this kind of admonishment is actually quite, it's fairly simple. You just remind yourself that this is hurting you, this is harmful. The anger, the reaction, the judging. This anger that you entertain, the third stanza, this anger that you entertain. And again, I'm reading actually Nyanamoli's translation, so it's a bit different from the one on our website. This anger that you entertain is gnawing at the very roots of all the virtue that you guard. Who is there such a fool as you? Anger, greed, they gnaw away at our goodness. Gnaw, they chew at it. They eat away at all the good that we've done. It gets spoiled. You can be helpful to people and charitable and kind, But you can be, then you're angry one time and you lose your reputation as a good person. And it inflames your mind and it prevents you from enjoying the peace and happiness that come from goodness. Remind ourselves of how it's eating away at our virtue. It's making us more coarse. It helps us to give up the inclination to be angry, to get angry. And the next stanza, another does ignoble deeds, so you are angry. How is this? Do you then want to copy too the sort of acts that he commits? So this person has done something evil, and it is evil. And so why in the world are you now, who believes that it was wrong, why are you now doing the same thing? That's a curious point, because when you get angry at someone who's evil, you're joining them in their evil. In fact, the Buddha said, and it mentions in this up above, that it's worse to get angry back at someone. It's a worse evil. If someone's angry at you and you return the anger, that's worse. Because we all get angry. Anger comes, and if we love each other, then we let each other vent. When someone gets angry at us, we appreciate what they're saying, we listen, and we try to calm them down and appease them in some way. But when you get angry back, then you start the fight, you start conflict. That's when the real problem is. So, and this is a good lesson, you know, we judge each other very much, and if someone gets angry, we get angry back. If someone is greedy, we get upset at them. If someone is arrogant and conceited, we get angry and upset about the bad things in others. And then, you know, that makes us just as bad. And moreover, we're too critical. We're critical of ourselves and critical of each other. You know, in monasteries, it's quite common for new monks to come and just criticize, roundly criticize every other monk, all the old monks, all the monks who have been there for a long time, because they're not perfect. With this kind of conception that if you're not perfect, then you deserve to be criticized. But really, if you're not perfect, you deserve to be helped, to be supported and directed and guided and pushed and prodded in the right direction, sure. But to denounce someone because they're imperfect, that's not the Buddhist way. For more reasons than one. Because it's useless, it's unhelpful, and because it's harmful to yourself as well. The next stanza just says that when you get angry at something someone has done, you do what they would have you do. They want you to suffer, and, well, bingo, you're suffering. And that's key, because really other people can't make us suffer. They can hit you, they can denounce you, they can scold you, they can insult you, but they can't make you suffer. They can't make your mind suffer. They can't make you get angry. I mean, it depends, you know, how you look at it, but the point, it's possible to be free from anger no matter what someone else does. But once you get angry, that's when the suffering comes. There's no question you suffer when you're angry. You suffer when you dislike something. That's where suffering comes from. Next stanza. If you get angry, then maybe you make him suffer, maybe not. Though with the hurt that anger brings, you certainly are punished now. So when you get angry back, usually it's because you are thinking of ways to retaliate, right? To seek revenge. And so there's like, well, maybe you can find revenge. Maybe you'll actually end up harming the other person and getting revenge. We don't know. It's possible. But what's certain is that you're punishing yourself with your anger. And you punish yourself more if you seek revenge. If anger-blinded enemies set out to tread the path of woe, do you, by getting angry too, intend to follow heel to toe? You intend to follow these anger-blinded enemies? If hurt is done you by a foe because of anger on your part, then why? Then put your anger down, for why should you be harassed groundlessly? Yes. Why? You aren't the one that did the evil. Why are you suffering? Someone hurts you or attacks you or criticizes you or so on. That's their problem. Why are you suffering? Since states last but a moment's time, those aggregates by which was done the odious act have ceased. So now, what is it you are angry with? This is very much in meditation. The person who we're angry at doesn't exist. The states that arose that gave rise to the event that we're angry at, those have ceased. When we're angry at something or worried about something, or when we're attached to something, we want something, that thing is only a concept. The experiences arise and cease, and if it's a good thing, well, that good thing is not really good in any way. It just arises and ceases, comes and goes, and the same with bad things. There's no person who is our enemy. What are we angry at? What really are we angry at? What we're angry at is a memory, a thought that arises in our mind that is an echo of some past deed, and we get angry at that thought. Whom shall he hurt who seeks to hurt another in the other's absence? Your presence is the cause of hurt. Why are you angry then with him? Yes, we're angry at ourselves, actually. It's our own mind states, the thoughts that arise in our own mind. The person who did this deed, if someone sits and is very angry at another person, it's nothing to do with the other person. It's you yourself who are hurting yourself. You're angry at thoughts that arise in your own mind. Nothing to do with the other person. So this is to do with anger. But more generally, it's the idea that only we can hurt ourselves. And happiness as well has to come from within. Happiness can't be based on a thing. And suffering doesn't come from things. Happiness and suffering don't come from the outside. They come from within. It's quite simple. Our state of mind determines our state of happiness, not the world around us. This is crucial. It's a specific Buddhist doctrine that happiness and suffering come from the mind. This is clear. So a big part of our practice is learning to be objective and to see the experiences that come from external, or that come from the body and the mind. To see them with wisdom. To cultivate a relationship with experience that is free from likes and dislikes. To be objective and to see things as they are, because when you do, it's not, they're not, there's not intrinsic likability or dislikability, attractiveness or unattractiveness. It's not a quality of things. And so when we look at things as they are, we find that they're not attractive. We don't give rise to the attraction. Attraction and aversion, they come from not seeing things as they are. That's key as well. Because it could be otherwise. Mostly we think it's otherwise. We think that some things are intrinsically beautiful or desirable, some other things are not, are intrinsically dislikable, you know, a direct cause for disliking. That's not true. When you see things as they are, it's only because of misconception that we have desire and aversion. So that's our Dhamma for tonight. If you're interested in the Visuddhimagga, we're actually studying it on Sundays, but we're most of the way through it already. I appreciate Visuddhimagga. It's a sort of more like a manual, you know, or a reference guide. It's good for teachers. It's also good for meditators, experienced meditators, I think. There's just so much in it, so many different, you know, like this set of verses is quite useful. That's from the Visuddhimagga. Anyway, you two can go. You don't have to stay. I'm just going to answer questions if people have. I was in New York. The monk I was staying with in New York doesn't like the Visuddhimagga, or the commentaries, or the Abhidhamma, which is very common with Western monks, especially in the Ajahn Chah group. Although he's not exactly with the Ajahn Chah group, they're so keen on the suttas, which, you know, is great. The suttas are just the most pure. But, you know, they're not, you know, the suttas are not the only source of Buddhism. And the suttas are talks that were given, mostly that were given to the monks, given to certain people at a certain time. And so they have to be interpreted, especially, you know, because we're so far removed from that time and that place. And so no matter what, you have to explain the suttas. And so either you follow the commentary explanation, the Visuddhimagga explanation, or you follow some modern commentator's explanation, and it turns out to be no better. It turns out to be actually usually worse, I would say, I would argue. Worse in the sense that whether you agree with it or not, far less rigorous, far less objective, far less comprehensive, you know, far less in-depth. And the Visuddhimagga it's incredible work. If you agree with it or disagree with it, it's amazing that someone actually wrote it, because it's huge and it's so in-depth and it's got so much in it. I remember I was giving a talk when I was in Sri Lanka last time, and the man who was translating for me refused to translate because I was quoting the Visuddhimagga, and he said, "Oh, we don't follow the Visuddhimagga here." That was a first for me. I was giving a talk and the translator wouldn't translate. I think I was saying something mean or evil. So it's a contentious. The Visuddhimagga tradition is fairly contentious to some people. Most Theravada societies, for the most part, they follow the Visuddhimagga. In Thailand, it forms the latter part of one's Pali studies. So any monk who studies higher level Pali will have to translate the Visuddhimagga into Thai and then translate Thai translations of the Visuddhimagga back into Pali. So they have to really memorize. Many of them basically, I think, will memorize the Visuddhimagga in Pali and English, which is impressive in itself. I mean, maybe not memorize, but come close. any requirements for taking a meditation course at our center? Yeah, probably. I mean, if you're coming alone and you're under 16, I think we'd have to have a talk about that. I don't know. I would imagine having people under 16 coming and doing courses is problematic unless we talk to their parents. I think 16 is probably. And as for upper age limit, it's more to do with your health, you know. If you're able to do walking and sitting meditation for hours a day, that's fine. You know, you can sit on a chair if you have to, but. Oh, I don't know. Robin, I haven't really thought about the future. I mean, there are some other things I'm looking at, actually. But, the Anguttara Nikaya is a good volume, and I've started maybe collecting some good suttas from it. A new set of robes for my trip to Asia. You know, the funny thing about these robes, they're fairly new, right? But they came with holes in them. Like, I think they were mouse-eaten or they were ripped or something. Because in my back, there's actually little holes that I probably should sew up. Not that that's here or there. But, no, these are fine in Asia. It'll be a little hot, but... You know, this upper robe I don't wear a lot of the time. When I'm in my room, I rarely wear this. Sometimes I just go bare chest, or sometimes I have a basic, what's called an angsa. It's just a very thin shoulder robe, shoulder cloth. But these aren't that hot. It's just cotton, so. It's actually not that hot. But it's going to be hot in June. So I'll try to go up and live on the mountain. I'm going to try to go up on a mountain in Sri Lanka. I'm arguing with Sangha about that. Sangha wants me to stay in Colombo for 2 weeks. I'm trying to push to take a week out. He says a week isn't enough. I know it isn't. I mean, a month isn't enough. I could spend months in Sri Lanka giving talks every day, but not really keen on it. And then in Thailand, maybe go back up on the mountain as well. Probably not stay in Jamtong very long because it's probably pretty hot in June. Unless it started raining, it should be okay, but... Do we only have a few months left? Have we really gone through most of the year? Thought we started, when did we start? August or something? July maybe? Time flies. Tempus fugit. Time flees. Okay, anyway, good night everyone. See you all next time.